This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening and welcome to Well, Well, Well. Jason and Jill with you tonight from the Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre. A big thank you to the team from Been There, Done That for another fantastic show. They'll be back again next week from 7 to 8. How are you doing, Jill?
I'm good, Jason. I'm loving the Well, Well, Well intro. Very, very funky. And that was Duffy that we listened to before as well, I believe.
It wasn't.
Who was it?
It was Adele.
That was Adele.
Well done, Jill.
Really funny, because when you said, yeah, she's like Duffy, I thought that was because we were playing Duffy.
Well, the little intro bit was Duffy, but yeah. But that was Rolling in the Deep by Adele.
Loving that track.
That should be for Adam, really, back at the office, because he's slightly obsessed with Adele.
He is. If he sends me one more link to go, no, but hang on, this is my last one. This is my Adele Live. Oh, yeah, great. Good on you. I've seen all Adele that I need to see for a little while,
yes,
I think.
But we're not here to talk about Adele.
We're not indeed, Jason.
Joining us this evening will be Liam Leonard from Gay and Lesbian Health Victoria to talk about one of the latest research projects. And, of course, we'll be covering some of the latest news in health and HIV and talking about some things happening in around the community.
Lovely.
But, of course, there'll be a mixed bag music. Jill will probably bag most of my music out. That's just how we roll here on Well, Well, Well.
It is when you and I are doing the show, Jason.
It is. It's always a joy.
It's a treat.
Unjoy.
It is a joy.
But, of course, we'd love to hear from the listener.
We do.
How can they get a hold of us?
Several options, Jason. You can call us on 1300-JOY-949 and have a conversation with a real-life person who's the lovely Gordon, who's waiting to take your call. Or you can email us on air at joy.org.au and we get that right here in the studio. Or you can send an SMS to 0427-JOY-949.
Now it is time in
to switch gears.
To switch gears, indeed, and head straight into
news.
News bits, exactly.
Shall I just keep finishing your sentences?
You know, it's just the way we roll. That is us. That is the chemistry between us.
It is. It's a yin and a yang, some might say. So, what's up first, Jason?
What's up? Well, there's been quite a bit of news about San Francisco and one of their. The Department of Public Health's latest campaigns. And they launched it just in time for Valentine's Day. And it is a new, the country's first social marketing campaign to promote the female condom for use by men as well as women. Now, the female condom, for those who aren't aware, is one that generally was developed for women to insert into their vagina as an option for women to have be able to take control of protecting themselves.
Yep.
And now that's been out since the 1990s, and they say that they have been giving them out at one of their clinics, but they've developed the campaign in response to just how many gay men were asking for it,
which
more
is
often
very
than women.
Interesting.
Now this project is supported by a Mac AIDS Fund grant. And they aim to distribute about 80,000 of the female condoms. So it'll be interesting to see, because the female condom, if you were to purchase yourself, is quite expensive compared to that of the male condom.
Yeah.
But I know that this is something that we did quite often in when I was working in outreach in Toronto. We would get them from Toronto Public Health as well for free, and we'd give them out to men and to women. And we also found that there were more men asking for them than women. And I'd be curious to know if anyone listening now has actually tried the female condom for male-to-male sex.
And if so, how'd you find it?
Yeah.
And what was the difference? Although I must say, in that report, it does go on to say that one of the main reasons why men prefer actually using the female condom is because it's actually thinner. And so there's obviously a degree of sensitivity that you can get during intercourse that you actually can't achieve with a latex or even a latex-free regular standard condom.
Exactly. Well, I mean, the big thing is the difference between latex and non-latex condoms, because of the fact that the other material that it's made of actually allows for better heat conduction as well. So it feels very different to traditional, I guess, latex condom.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I mean, it's a completely different experience. Some men prefer it. Some men prefer the male condom. So yeah, SMS, feel free to SMS on 0427JOY949 and let us know if you've ever used the female condom and what your experience was like.
I'd be interested to
hear. You don't have
to
leave us your name.
No, it can be completely anonymous. We don't actually want to know, you know. No.
Hey, that's all right.
And what's up next, Jason? I believe we've got...
Well,
should I stop saying that?
Yes, it's all right. We can switch gears. That's what we do.
Okay,
on
cool.
Mobile, Jill. This is the latest from an article from The Age, and it's reporting that there has been a rise in average cholesterol levels as of late, and experts are thinking that it could be linked to increased spending on fast food during the global financial crisis, which is very, very interesting, but we all know that, you know, fast food can often be the cheaper option when looking for sustenance. Unfortunately, not the best for us. But researchers from the Baker IDI Heart and Diabetes Institute conducted Australia's first ever, or largest ever rather, study of cholesterol levels, say that a fast food binge could explain the rise after 5 years of decline. In a study of 200,000 patients whose cholesterol was being managed by GPs across Australia, between 2004-2009, determined this these levels. The researchers are quoted as saying, "One wonders whether the global financial crisis may have contributed, or whether it was the increasing prices of healthy food and causing people to eat less and go for those cheaper, healthier options." It'll be interesting to see if the current situation that we have here in Australia with the drought, but also with the floods.
With the floods and the drought, yeah, I know.
So see if that actually has an impact, as that's likely going to raise the cost of the healthier food options as well.
Well, absolutely, Jason. I mean, I'm a bit of a documentary addict, and I saw a documentary that I'd been kind of not really wanting to see because I knew it was going to be painful, called Food Inc., and it looked at exactly these things, and it was... the direct correlation between poverty, essentially, and low socioeconomic sort of areas within, it was based in America, mm-hmm. And those who have access to organic fruit and vegetables and, you know, the luxury that really is, but also how that affected people's health. And, I mean, there's been study after study after study done around this stuff, and there is such a clear link between how well you can afford to eat and how healthy you are. Mm. And those who can't afford to eat very well, it is cheaper, certainly in America, where you can get a cheeseburger for $1. That's actually cheaper than buying a head of lettuce. And that was $3.49 or something. Mm. I mean, if you've got a family of four, what are you going to do?
And you can bring it in a bit more locally as well and think, you know, as it, there's a recent a pilot project that's been done at the Positive Living Center, looking at providing not only some healthy food, but also recipes to be able to give people the knowledge on how to prepare healthy meals with that food.
Because that's the other thing. You can have access to fruit and vegetables, but excuse me, it's knowing what to do with them as well. You know, it's all well and good, but I mean, some people can be understandably quite overwhelmed by seeing, you know, every conceivable vegetable when you walk into a supermarket and thinking, well, I actually don't know what to do with it. It's this assumption that everyone's got this knowledge of how to feed themselves and feed themselves well is quite naive, really.
And there's actually in the media as of late, there was a woman that has put together this website, which we can try and look up during the break, which provides, I guess, support and education on to help people be able to purchase healthy foods and meals for the families at, you know, as cheaply as possible.
Yeah, I think her goal was $40 for a fortnight.
Which is unbelievable.
So that's a family of three and it's got recipes. It's a very good website, actually.
My family of two, I struggle to be able to get out of the checkout line without having $30 most days. So,
no. I'm a family of one, Jason.
Yeah, the kettle chips don't help.
No.
But so it's an interesting story. And as I said, that's from The Age. So feel free to have a look and get more information. Otherwise, you can also have a look at the Baker IDI Heart and Diabetes Institute website.
Good stuff.
Indeed. Now, there's just one last little story, which I think is a bit more lighthearted and light and fluffy.
It's so fluffy.
A schoolgirl from Cairns in Far North Queensland has won a top science award for making a hangover-free wine, even though she's too young to drink the alcohol. This student beat 4,000 students to take out the BHP Billiton CSIRO Science Award for her peach wine.
The fact that it's peach wine as well.
Yeah, the teenager says the wine is made without hangover-inducing preservatives and contains about 13% alcohol. She says the wine can be stored for up to 6 weeks, and she's thrilled with the award, but has yet to take a tipple. Haven't had a chance to take the wine, she states, but of course, you know, she is underage, so...
Exactly. But I'm wondering if she knows it tastes like crap. Or does, you know, that's the bit that I kind of go, well, how do you know it doesn't taste like rubbish?
I'm sure the judges probably would have had a tipple or two.
Yeah, true. Peach wine, though.
But joining us in studio right now is Liam Leonard from Gay Lesbian Health Victoria. Welcome, Liam.
Hello, Jason and Jill.
Might help if I turn your mic on.
There you go.
Hello, Jason and Jill.
Oh, there
Hello,
we go.
Hello, Liam.
Now, Liam... Maybe if we could start off by just having you tell us a bit about your role at GLHV.
All right. GLHV stands for Gay and Lesbian Health Victoria, which is an independent research, policy and information unit that was set up in 2004. Basically, to improve health services and the quality of health service provision for GLBTI Victorians. And my job within that is I'm called a manager of education and policy, and what that actually means is an open question. but I have a lot to do with some of the research programs that we do. I do a lot of work inter-government still in policy development to do with GLBTI people, and increasingly I've had a role in developing some of GLHV's training modules, which are basically GLBTI sensitivity training for workers across different sectors of the health field, so mental health, drug and alcohol. And more recently, I've ended up running or being part of a team that runs this particular research project.
Now, you kind of alluded to it already. I believe the name of it is Private Lives 2.
Yes.
Can you give us a bit of an overview of what the study is all about?
Private Lives 2, if you go after the colon, it says the second national survey of the health and well-being of GLBTI Australians. And what the survey is it's an online survey primarily, but not exclusively this time around. And it's looking at sort of the diversity of the lives of GLBTI people. And it's a national survey, which is extremely important. So whereas a lot of the other surveys that are done on segments of the GLBTI population will look at sexual health, might look at drug and alcohol use. This is a survey that looks at the diversity of our lives. So there are questions that ask about your health, your mental health, physical health. There are also questions about community connectedness, who your friends are, how you spend your time, questions about your experiences of discrimination, and a whole series of other questions. So it's the breadth of the survey, really, that sets it apart, and the fact that it's national. Which is extremely important. I want to keep stressing that.
It almost seems like it brings in several kind of social determinants of health into the survey.
It does.
More than just kind of health in general.
Yeah, well, yes. The way the survey is constructed is, and I'll talk about the first one from which it sort of has grown, but it's a survey that just wants to look at what GLBTI people do. The health and well-being is the primary focus, but it's not exclusive. And so, yes, some of the things around discrimination, for instance, can be seen as a social determinant of health. We look at issues around drug and alcohol use. We don't look at risk factors for those. Those are not questions that are asked in the survey. So we look at rates of use, patterns of use. Yes, and there are other social determinants really broadly, like community connectedness, so the section on how connected you are to the GLBTI community and to the mainstream community in this survey can be thought of in that sort of framework. But the survey really is divided into quite different sections in many ways, health and well-being, community connectedness, sections on internet use this time, and a whole set, of course, of demographics. We ask those sort of standard ABS questions that we don't generally get asked, so income, status, place of residence, relationship status, quite a lot this time on family, partners, all that sort of stuff as well sits behind the survey.
Now, Liam, as you've said, you know, this isn't the first time, this is the second time round that this has been run. What were some of the key outcomes that you sort of managed to ascertain from the first study?
I wasn't involved in the first study. I was working in government at that stage, but I'll talk about how important it was in the work I did in government. And I always think things are better the second time round, but I'm incredibly biased because I'm working on the second survey. The first thing that the survey did was there had never been, and someone's going to correct me, I'm sure, but I think it was the first national survey of GLBTI health and wellbeing done anywhere in the world.
Wow.
So there had been state-based surveys, there had been regional surveys, there had been surveys that had done nationally around particular issues like HIV or sexual health. This, we believe, was the first, or if not the first, one of the first at a national level. So part of what the survey did, it allows us for the first time to do some comparison between GLBTI people's experiences of a whole range of things and mainstream population. Everything from the demographic data, are we a highly educated community compared to the mainstream? Are we subject to higher rates of discrimination? Do we have higher rates of mental health problems, including depression? It allowed those sorts of comparisons to be done. And depending on, particularly in the second one, if we can get the numbers up a bit, we might be able to do cross-state comparisons for the first time. Are there differences in being a GLBTI person in Victoria compared to Queensland? I choose that for all sorts of reasons. So the survey provided data for the first time on GLBT people's lives across the board. It provided a point of comparison to the mainstream population, and it gave us the first cut of just how GLBTI people live generally as people or as citizens, or whatever term you want to case that in, which we don't have in those very particular surveys that only ask about one little slice of our lives, which of course yield more data in that space than this is going to yield, but don't give you that broad sense. And the survey proved incredibly useful in lobbying government because it also provided data for what many of us knew anecdotally, that yes, there are high rates of depression, yes, there are high rates of drug and alcohol use, but it also allowed us to look at the degree to which we use the internet, the degree to which we, members of associations, both mainstream and GLBTI, it really became a useful tool for people who want to lobby back into government along a number of different areas. Right, we need money for GLBTI social connectedness.
Yeah.
We need money for mental health. We need clearly training and policy in this area. So private lives, the first one, really was, I think, extremely important for garnering both the evidence base and the support.
Sure.
And it crops up all over the place still. I'm always amazed how often it's quoted in, you know, government reports, in funding applications that people make, even at local council level for services for GLBTI people. There's private lives in the bibliography. So, well,
I guess, as you said before, it's unique in the sense that it's a community-wide survey. So it's a full snapshot of the entire community as opposed to just looking at gay men or looking at lesbians and their health issues.
Yes, yeah, it is.
Now, obviously, the great part of once Private Lives 2 is done is to be able to make a comparison between the outcomes of the first one and this one. But you alluded earlier that there are some additional questions in this one?
There are, and some things have been cut back. This one is funded partly, in fact, it's the major funder, is Beyond Blue. Which was not the case with the first one. So we've beefed up and refined questions around depression and particularly used scales and questions for assessing depression that can be compared to standard scales being used for population at large. So we've refined that section. There are questions on disability, which we were not asked at all in the first one. There's more extensive questions on internet use because things have changed. There's questions on relationship status that look now at vaguely but not directly at issues around same-sex and equal marriage, but also that ask one or two questions around legislative reforms that, of course, have happened in the last 5 years since the first one happened. We've also cut back a little bit on the fairly explicit sexual health questions because we feel that those are covered exhaustively in other surveys, and it also shifts the tone of this one. This one has more of a community feel than the first one, I think, came out of a desire to have this general picture, but also was more sexual health driven. So it's got two thirds, three quarters of the questions are pretty much the same. There are some additional and some areas that we've cut back a little.
Changing with the times, I guess. Makes sense.
Now, another question. I've got so many questions that we haven't even thought of. But after hearing you speak, I'm just going, oh my God.
I could ask that.
No, no, you're doing very well. The fact that I want to ask more questions demonstrates it.
No, people can't shut me up, Jill.
The sort of the general rainbow community, I guess, is quite used to being recruited for research projects. So what makes this one different or stand out? Is it more about those sort of broader social aspects of things that people actually don't get the opportunity to talk about, like their internet usage, for example, and where they're, you know, what those sort of how that affects them and how that means they interact with the world around them more? Is it bigger than that?
Yes. Well, I mean, the first thing is just the fact that it, as Jason said, it covers the breadth of GLBT people's lives in a way that most surveys don't. They target in on one specific issue or one slice of the community. So they'll look either at sexual health or they might look at lesbians. They don't do GLBT in its entirety. So that's the first reason why I think it's very different. And I think it's a different experience filling it in because you sort of, you're asked questions about A, then B, then C, about, you know, your private life, your social life, friendship networks, your health, discrimination. And as you fill it out, you sort of think, oh, this covers many, many aspects of my life. So I think that's important. I think the second thing, and I don't know how this will come out in the results, is that in this second iteration of the survey, we're trying at GLHV to get away from, you know, gay and lesbians and trans people are only constructed as effects of homophobia. And that's the only way we're of interest to anybody. We're saying, no, we are absolutely a legitimate group around a particular set of identities. And so the survey's got a bit more of a potentially a positive twist. It's still asking questions around mental health and the effects of discrimination, but the questions around community, community connectedness, relationships have shifted into a very different space because things have shifted dramatically over 5 years. So I think the second thing about Private Lives too is it's hopefully it's got a slightly different flavour in the way it's constructed, and hopefully we'll see that reflected in some really positive shifts within the community. Now, I don't know that, but we'll see what happens.
Now, just on the topic of, I guess, community connectedness, how do you try to reach respondents that might not be as connected to the community and get them involved in the survey? It's kind of an interesting little
It's a difficult question. And methodologically, we're limited really by the amount of money that we have for the survey. So it's an e-survey primarily, which already means that, you know, we can get it out through a whole lot of networks where people who aren't necessarily connected to the community may or may not see it. Whether they'll fill it in, it's another matter altogether. Mm. We haven't had a strategy put in place to absolutely target whether you call them hard to reach or community disaffected or people who just don't want in any way to acknowledge that they may be part of this community. So, but what we have done this time, which isn't exactly your question, is that we've sent out
some response.
It is a bit. But well, the first part was an honest answer. And there will be limitations, and any of us working in GLBT stuff just know it recurs endlessly. How do you contact people who actually don't want to be contacted is the bottom line. But we have actually put together a hard copy version, which we didn't do in the first one because it's extremely expensive to do the data entry. This may not be the case this time. We're trying to work new methodologies up. But we have got hard copies for 60 plus because one of the things from Private Lives, the first one, was that the 60 plus population were really underrepresented. From what we know about ageing and the percentage of GLBT people who are over 60, they were really underrepresented in the response rate. And partly that's because the first one was also an e-version and their literacy and use of computers were so much less. That's probably changed a bit anyway, but we have got hard copies that we're sending out to some of the seniors groups across the country, and Catherine Barrett's managing that. And if at the moment, we're responding to those agencies ringing us up or emailing Catherine asking for copies for their GLBTI seniors. We've already sent out nearly 250. And that if we get half of those filled out, it'll bump up the numbers. So there's a hard-to-reach group for different reasons, not because they don't identify, but because the actual methodology of the survey worked against them to some degree.
Now, if people are listening right now and want to fill out the survey, how can they get involved?
Funnily enough, I can never remember the actual address for it. They can go to GLHV, so that's just www.glhv.org.au,
yep,
which is a nice, easy thing to remember. But the actual address is www.privatelivessurvey, one word, private lives, and then another S for survey, .org.au. And you'll just be taken into the survey proper. And, you know, we've got a good response rate, but it's not as good as we'd like. So the next month or 2 months, we're going to really try and do this sort of spruiking, I suppose.
Can I ask him how long does it take to actually do the survey? Because people might be going, oh, is it something you can do in your lunch hour, or is it something you've got to sort of spend a whole week doing?
Oh, no, no.
You've got to take a time off work. I've got to fill in a survey.
If you've got an incredibly complicated, interesting life, maybe 20 minutes, 25. For me, boring and stayed 10 minutes. So I reckon between 10 and 25 minutes. 25 right. minutes max.
Because I know some of these surveys, these online things, people really drill down, and it does take a good hour and a half to properly. And so I'm sort of thinking, people, you know, the listener might be sitting there thinking, my goodness, the amount of stuff that you're actually adding this time might therefore increase the time.
I reckon 25 minutes, really.
Okay.
Well, which is perfect, because they can log on right now and finish it by the time the show finishes.
By the time the show's over. Perfect.
We'd like 4,000 GLBT people to log on.
Excellent. I'm sure there's that many people listening to us right now. We've got a broad fan base. But thanks again, Liam, for coming in and telling us a bit more about the project, and best of luck.
And good luck.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And hopefully come back in the next few weeks and I'll give you some update on some of the data.
Fantastic.
If you're interested.
That sounds fantastic. And if you are interested in taking a couple of moments of your time this evening to complete the survey, you can do so by logging on to privatelivesstudy.org.au. That's private lives with an S, and then study with an S as well. org.au.
It sounds fascinating, actually. It really does.
Well, as you said, you know, there's many, many surveys that are done that are that focus on a specific health issue or a specific segment of our community. And it's great to be able to have something that looks like it'll be kind of repeated every couple of years to give us a snapshot of the community at large.
Of broader issues.
Yeah. So, again, take a couple of moments tonight. Do it right now while you're listening to the sultry sound of my voice. And again, it's privatelivesstudy.org.au. But a bit of excitement last week, Jill.
Share, Jason. Share with
the listener. Season 3 of Queer as Fuck started.
Season 3.
Indeed. Some great news for existing Queer as Fuck fans, and for anyone who hasn't checked it out, great news for you too, because it means there's new episodes for you to go and check out. In addition to the first two seasons.
It's a whole lot of viewing potential.
Indeed. If you want to find out more, you can just log on to facebook.com/QAFXXK. Very, very exciting. We've got, we're just about to get our 2,000th fan.
2,000th.
And looking at about, you know, 1,200 active monthly users, which is
Phenomenal,
fantastic.
Really.
So obviously some people that are hooked.
Absolutely. Well, I am.
But yeah, for anyone that saw the cliffhanger from the end of season two, and it kind of plays out in the latest episode, which was released yesterday online. So have a look at that, facebook.com/QAFXXK. Or if you're not a Facebook member or Facebook phobic, you can check it out on YouTube, which is youtube.com/QueerAsFXXK.
Can you give the listener a bit of a preview treat of what may happen in future episodes?
Let's just say there's parenting becomes a bit of a theme in this one.
Parenting. Right.
I don't want to give too much away.
No,
but,
you don't.
There's some jealousy. There's some bitchiness. Overall delight, really.
Parenting and bitchiness.
Check it out for yourself.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Now, the Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre.
That's us.
Is us. And we're currently looking for volunteers to help with the day-to-day work of our organisation. Go on.
I was just going to say, are there any particular areas that are seeking?
There are, actually. Well, there's a myriad, that's my word du jour, a myriad of vacancies at the moment. We've got a few in health promotion, which is in the outreach program and also the peer education area. We have vacancies at the reception and sort of more administrative tasks as well. And there's also vacancies in the social support area over at the Positive Living Centre. And they're also very keen to get some daytime drivers, which really involves driving clients to appointments and generally medical appointments, which they're always in need of. So if you do want to attend a volunteer information session, you can contact Shane Kelly, who's the volunteer coordinator, and you can do that through our website. What might that be, Jason?
That is vicaids.asn.au, V-I-C-E aids.asn.au.
Or
call our volunteer coordinator, Shane Kelly, on 9865-6700.
And as we know, volunteering can lead to a myriad of other opportunities. Okay. As people might know, our current president, Michael Williams, started off as a noble volunteer himself.
Hmm.
So before you know it, you could be running the organisation if you get a foot in the door now.
Grand schemes of taking over the world. Yeah, volunteer exactly. With us.
Exactly. Small steps, small steps. You've got to start somewhere.
Now, we often have staff from PLWHA Victoria, or people living with HIV AIDS Victoria, on to talk about their programs and services. And one of their regular peer support groups is about to kick off, actually, this weekend. So get in quick if you haven't already. And it is Phoenix, which is a group for men who have recently been diagnosed with HIV, so mm-hmm. being diagnosed with within the past 2 years or so. And it's it runs for the entire weekend, and it's an opportunity to essentially get the answers that you need and find the support among other men in your situation as well. It is for gay and bisexual men, and you can learn strategies for managing and making sense of HIV, explore the issues around disclosure, relationships, and how to maintain your general and sexual health. If you want to find out more information or get in quick, because it's starting tomorrow, you can contact Vic at PLWHA Victoria on 9865-6772. That is 9865-6772.
And I think it's possibly a good opportunity, Jason, to point out that the reason why these workshops continue to run is because they are extremely successful and people get a huge degree of benefit out of attending them. And I think that one of the scariest things that I've heard are for people who are newly diagnosed HIV positive is that sense of isolation and that nobody else has ever gone through this, nobody else has ever experienced it. What do I do now? Who do I talk to? And these workshops really allow for that sense of I'm not alone. There are other people who are going through what I'm going through and it's okay. Things will be okay.
Yeah.
And we should probably point out as well that confidentiality is assured at Indeed. Phoenix as well.
Indeed. But there's another group that they will be running in the next coming months, and it's actually more of an informal barbecue, really. It's called Opposites Attract, and it's for serodiscordant couples, so couples where one partner is HIV negative and the other is HIV positive, to come together and discuss managing HIV in their relationships. Now, this is something that we actually had John from PLWHA Victoria on back at the end of last year
mm-hmm.
To talk to us about, and they're running it again. So the cost is going to be about $20 per couple. And if you want to register your interest before right away, so you can be notified when the date has been set for this barbecue, you can also contact Vic at PLWHA Victoria. And his number again is 9865-6772.
Good stuff.
Indeed, it is good stuff, Jill.
But you know what?
What is it?
It's kind of sad stuff because we've kind of run out of time.
We have. We do that.
And we do. We don't actually know what the theme is.
We don't.
The theme party.
But I'm sure the theme is going to be fun.
Is coming up next. Well, it's a party.
Yep.
So it's going to be fun by default. And that will, of course, theme party will be followed by hide and seek with Dean and Travis. And they do get down and dirty. Mm-mm-mm.
Anyone you'd like to say hello to? I know Tex is listening and was enjoying the music. I'm not sure what he thought after the
last track, but Betty, we're lucky if we're still listening to the wireless after that last little track. Yes, hello, Tex. Also, big hello to Tex and a very big hello to Harry.
Oh, hello, Harry.
Anyone for you, Jason?
No. Say hello to Glenda. She didn't send a message in tonight, but I'm sure she's listening.
Oh, I'm sure she is as well.
That's saucy minx. But taking us out this evening is...
Better the Devil, you know.
A little bit of Kylie Minogue.
Yeah, now that I chose.
A
that
classic.
I'm pretty happy. Yeah.
So be sure to tune in next week from 8 to 9 p.m. But, what better way to leave us with a little bit of Kylie Minogue?
I kind of agree.
Have a great week and...
See you next week.
See you next week indeed.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.